Your kind attention, please. Good afternoon to you all, dear fellows, members, invitees, guests, and our Geological Society senior fellows, Lingaraja sir, the persons who are now. In fact, we have shifted from Geological Society of India to Operation Karnataka and Goa Auditorium because of the fact that there was no power in our area, that is in Banshankari third stage, since morning. Then we had to request Dr. Ravi. So they readily agreed. In fact, I should be thankful to them. And our today's speaker, especially Dr. Isfaq Ahmed Mir, he is from here, this place only. So it is all the more comfortable to him as well as we, because Geological Survey of India and Geological Society of India are almost synonymous. So it's our good fortune that we are holding the meeting here. So before I invite our today's speaker, Dr. Isfaq, I would like to give a brief background about his professional experience. In fact, Dr. Isfaq, he obtained his master's in applied geology from Kashmir University in 2005. And he completed his PhD in marine geology from Goa University. That's, he worked in a CSIR NIO lab. That was in 2015. His research is on geochemical and organic matter isotopic studies to understand the late quaternary climate in the Indian Ocean. Quite a specialized subject. So far, I think in the society, it's the first time we are holding such a talk. So it's good on his part because we gave him a very short duration to get prepared for this talk, since today was supposed to be the talk of one Professor Bhattacharya from Sweden. In fact, since he is occupied with some other international seminar, he expressed his inability to come and rather give his talk virtually. So in that short period of time, it's Dr. Isfaq Ahmed who came forward to give today's special talk. His research interest includes sedimentology, enhanced rock weathering, environmental geochemistry, marine geology, CO2 removal by remineralization, geochemical mapping, quaternary climate, stable isotopes, limnogeology. So wonderful, subjects he is dealing with, because today wherever you go, the people talk about climate only, because of the sudden changes in the climate. We are having a lot of drought areas. At the same time, we are having a lot of rain areas in the drought condition or desert conditions. In fact, Dr. Isfaq joined Geological Survey of India in the year 2011 as geologist. And he was promoted as senior geologist in 2016 and is presently posted at State Unit, Karnataka and Goa, Bangalore. He has published over a dozen peer-reviewed articles, both in national and international journals. And he has contributed to two book chapters in two books, namely Science Policies and Conflicts of Climate Change, Indian Perspective, Springer Climate, that was published in 2022. And he has got another book chapter in Quaternary Climate Change over the Indian Subcontinent, CRC Press, Taylor and Francis Group, 2021. In fact, he has also co-authored a book titled Climate Dynamics Over Indian Subcontinent, Geological Perspectives for Cambridge Scholars Publishing, USA. In addition, yes, to his credit, several technical reports. That's what in Geological Survey of India we call as reports. He has got several reports also to his credit. But I am really amazed at his young age. He has done wonderful work and he has contributed a lot in understanding the climate and also geology, because earth and climate, they are intricately related. So now, before I call upon Dr. Isfaq, there are some distinguished audiences from overseas. I would like to invite them for today's lecture of Dr. Isfaq. He would be speaking on biogeochemical potential of India to feed the nation and stabilize climate. So, Dr. Isfaq, what a great pleasure in inviting you to present today's talk, and it's over to you now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon to all. First, I would like to thank Geological Society of India for inviting me and giving me a chance to share my experience with all of you.
You can just ask the audience if you are audible or not, because I think we have not this audience, but no, cheer. Yes, you are, Thomas is there.
Hi, Tom. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you are audible.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Very nice. First slide.
So title of my talk is India's biogeochemical potential to feed the country and stabilize the climate. My PhD, it was based on sediment cores, and those days I worked for some past 100 kilo years, late quaternary time. And when I was reconstructing the climate change happening in this part of the world or other parts of the world, so then this thing was clear up to very recent, some past 2,000 to 3,000 or 5,000 years. Before that, whatsoever was happening, fluctuating, it was natural. So then after that, everything started to shoot up. Carbon become more in the air, methane becoming more. So then slowly, slowly, I came, entered into GSI, and I started working in different projects. And I got a chance to work in pan-India environment. I worked in Ladakh Himalayas, Kashmir Valley, and now I am working in the southern terrain. So then I saw some common things, that heat is becoming more and more everywhere. There are disasters happening everywhere. So then I thought, yes, this Anthropocene, a very recent and a very small time, it is very different from the times which were on this planet before in the geological time scales. So then, okay, there it is very well understood, climate change is happening, problems are there. So, but there is still now a process has been started. People are thinking how we can stop this climate change and how we can carry out the work and hand over this planet in safer hands for future generations. So this is, problems are happening, and there are some solutions. And as a geologist, we can also contribute in tackling the climate change, and how good it will be for our country, for our people, and globally, how good it will be. So for that, I am going to share some knowledge with you. So this graph I am showing deliberately because it is for some past 8 million years. So if one thing is clear, up to very recent, there were the fluctuations in the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which has been reconstructed. So it has never crossed 300 parts per million. That means people living before us, they were not modern men, but they were living in very close association with nature. So then we modern men approached it here, and the problem started. If you see this 1950 level and the current level, so this is because of our more ultra-modern life. We tried to consume more and more resources, and we tried to deplete our natural resources and pollute the atmosphere. Now this graph, it is our past 2023 years. I had just a bit made it to make it more elaborate. So if we see from the 1 CE to some round about 700 CE, and when we humans did invention of steam engine, means that past industrial era we entered, so we started altering the environment. Temperature started increasing as well as CO2 started increasing. So if we see this another figure, so from the 1900 to 2000, if we see population started to increase drastically on the planet. To 1750, population was less than 1000 million years, and now it has gone near, it is little bit older data, near this time we are near 8 billion. And there is a very close correlation between increase of population and increase of atmospheric carbon dioxide. So now in this plot, if you see this, I'm showing the temperature average on Earth, how much it is increasing. So if we see the gray part on the bottom from 1940 to 22, it has fluctuated, but it was not that high as we are noticing now. 23, if we see, it has crossed all the earlier records, and 24 is now trying to cross the records of 24. That means trend is like this, heat is becoming more heat, and it is not only the plats. This year in the Bangalore city, we noticed our temperature here reached 41 degree, and same type of signatures we are getting throughout the globe. Rains are becoming more extreme, floods are becoming more extreme, heat is becoming more extreme. So all the disasters happening because of two more carbon in the atmosphere, they are evident. So what it means? A blue planet which was given to us, we are going to convert it into a brown planet or ash ball. So if that happens, so there means there will be the next mega mass extinction going to happen, and it will not be asteroids, it will not be volcanoes, it will be because of us. So what are the causes which are creating this climate change? It is two more industrialization, two more use of energy resources, our modern agriculture, which is also industrial because it is contaminating, polluting, deforestation, consumer practices, we are becoming more and more consumers. Livestock is also, it is an industry, we tame the animals the way we want for our benefits. Transport, now every planet on the, every person on the planet want to have two-wheeler or four-wheeler. So that means too many automobiles, too many pollution. It is becoming a very big threat to the environment. Resource extraction, everyone is having a comfortable life. Every one of us now has a cell phone, laptop. So means we have to extract more resources for this modern man's life. And this all is creating pollution. So what are the effects of these all the activities? Rising temperature, rising sea level, unpredictable weather patterns, increase in extreme weather events, land degradation, loss of wildlife and biodiversity. And that is having some social impacts. So there will be the displacement of people, and it is already happening because if we see the small island countries, they are sinking. Coastal parts are sinking and people are trying to migrate to some safer zones. Poverty will be more common, loss of livelihood, hunger, malnutrition, risk of diseases, global food and water shortage, and we can say more and more war because resources will be under stress. So this climate change is happening, it everyone of knows us that heat is more, sea level is more, ice, glaciers are melting. Now it is understood and most of the people on the planet now accept this, yes, climate change is happening and it is because of us. But that is not going to work, and now a small minority on the planet, some people had started to thinking, if the business goes as usual, so then what will be the future? So now some science is going on, some good activities are happening on the planet which is are trying to stabilize the climate. Yes, there is a hope we can stop it the way in the 300 years we spoiled it. We have the tendency that fast we can make it better also. Now if we come to this, in addition to reduction of emission, so there is two more atmospheric CO2, means we have to stop the emissions. That is going on. We are doing now, we are searching for critical minerals, those minerals which are good for our electric, solar, wind. So that is going on. Means, yes, we are trying to stop the emissions, but that is not enough. Whatsoever is in the atmosphere, that needs to be reduced also. Means CO2 removal, CDR is required, and it is required at gigatons per year. Up to mid of the century, then only we can reach the Paris Agreement of keeping the planet in the stable form of less than 2 degrees. So methods of carbon dioxide removal offer meaningful co-benefits and can be delivered at significant scale in the coming years with the potential for low cost or a particular interest. So nowadays there are so many methods of carbon sequestration people are discussing, and who the methods which are more sustainable, cheap, and which are scalable, we have to focus on those. So now there is one confusion between two terms. One is carbon capture and one is carbon removal. So carbon removal is something we have to remove what is already in the atmosphere, and capture is something whatsoever we emit that we have to capture and bury deep inside the earth. So globally, so many work is going on, and in India also there some work has been started. It is not that advanced, but slowly it is going on. And recently in COP, which was in Dubai, there was presented one first white paper by Carbon Removal Alliance of India. And this picture is from their website, there that white paper I am showing. So there, if you see, from left to right, there are so many methods shown which are useful in carbon capturing or carbon removal from the atmosphere. Land use, land cover is there, means coastal wetlands and forests, means if we do more and more mangrove afforestation, forest afforestation, that is going to help. Regenerative farming, that is going to help. If we convert biomass into biochar, instead of putting CO2 into the atmosphere in the oxygen deficient environment, we burn and make biochar. That biochar can be used as a fuel. That way it is also good. Biomass and then bioenergy means if we convert our biomass to energy, is just like cow dung is converted into natural gas. So like this, now we are saying bioethanol, biodiesel. So these are some ways to reduce emissions going to the atmosphere.
May I request our audiences to switch off their microphone, please? Please mute it.
So one more method is carbon utilization. Here one truck is shown. That means wherever we are having some point sources of carbon dioxide, mostly in the industrial or thermal power plants. So there, instead of emitting into the atmosphere, if we capture it and we can bury it deep inside the saline aquifers, some deep mining sites, which are now cavities, empty, if they are not leaky. So it needs a vast R&D, and now people are doing in Iceland, they are injecting carbon dioxide, mixed with water deep inside the basalts, and they have got very good results. So now there comes one more method, direct air capture. So this is something which we need to do in cities, because in city we are having non-point sources. So it is very difficult to focus on one source. So then atmospheric capture is required to stabilize carbon dioxide of our urban areas, and maybe that will then help to reduce the heat. So these all methods, if we see, there some are biologists are involved, marine people are involved, or some technologists are involved, or engineers are involved. So now if we see the minerals, so there our geologists' role comes there to help in tackling the climate change. So mineral form, there is enhanced weathering. I will discuss this. That is the focus of my topic. And ocean alkalization, these two methods are there, sustainable methods of capturing the carbon. And one more method is geological storage, means if this is the carbon utilization or direct air capture, so there also we have to play the role, because we have to identify very deep burial sites where we can safely store our carbon dioxide, which we can capture from atmosphere. So this is the title of this white paper, which has been presented in COP Dubai, in the recent COP which was there. The title is Durable Carbon Dioxide Removal in India. So it is showing the potential of India, the opportunity to lead the world while improving agriculture system, increasing export revenue and generating jobs. A white paper for Indian policy makers. It was presented in December 23. And I think it is the first white paper from India for this carbon removing project. So now I am highlighting this means geological storage, enhanced weathering or ocean alkalinity. There we geologists have to play a role. Carbon dioxide removal methods sequester CO2 already in the air. So right now the methods we are using, on average 2 billion tons of CO2 is sequestered every year. But it is too less. If we want to stable climate and reach net zero or stop 1.5 further increase, so we have to make it 4 times, means it should be 8 billion tons of carbon removal per year. Then in the mid-century, we can remove most part of the excess carbon in atmosphere, then we can stabilize the climate. So this enhanced rock weathering, it is a one method where we can have food, where we can stabilize climate, and we can save our oceans. So this I am going to show in detail. Yeah, definitely geology has a role to address climate change. So now if we go to this slide, if we see on the tectonic cycle or geological time scales, there is subduction, there is upliftment, mountain building, and when mountain building is, there is then exposure, there is rainfall, weathering, erosion, transport, and finally sediment is getting deposited into the oceans. So this thermostat has all the times balanced Earth's climate. It has not given it a chance to go too high or too less. Means atmospheric carbon dioxide is reacting with rainwater. It is forming some weak acids, carbonic acids. They in the rainfall fell onto the rocks, and there are calcium and magnesium minerals in the rocks. They get dissolved, and those calcium and magnesium mineral ions reach into the ocean, and that way carbon dioxide is getting locked into the limestone in the ocean bottom and gets stored there for millions of years. So this is a very natural process of carbon capture, which nature is doing. And this is the concept now used in enhanced weathering. So for millions of years, CO2 has combined with rain to form dilute acids. When this falls on lithosphere, CO2 interacts with rocks, minerals, and is safely stored as carbonates. Now the question is it possible to accelerate this weathering, which removes CO2 from air? Answer is yes. Through enhanced weathering, this is possible. It is one of the methods, but very sustainable method. So enhanced weathering is what we have to speed up the process, what nature was doing. CO2 can be locked away swiftly and at a scale. Now this diagram I will show you, if you see on the top left side, we are going to a mining area, we are bringing some rocks, and then where minerals are mined and finally crushed. Then arrow shows minerals are transported, and that finally mineral powder, they are sprayed into the agriculture farms and forests. This mineral dust is spread in fields, and carbon dioxide is absorbed as minerals get weathered. And some part of this with rainfall is getting flushed to the water bodies, to the lakes, to the rivers, and finally into the oceans. And their minerals which get washed off from the land, they get stored in the oceans, and those molecules of calcium, magnesium, when reacting with carbonic and bicarbonate ions, form calcium carbonate, and this way gets stored into the ocean. So this is how enhanced weathering is working. So now this red box, I will show little bit detail how it works. So now this is how enhanced weathering works. So when we are in the farms, we scatter volcanic rock dust. And this volcanic rock dust is not only for carbon capturing, it is giving natural fertilizers also, some minerals which are essential for the growth of good vegetation. So I will discuss that also later. So then on the spray dust in the agriculture farms, falling rain absorbs CO2 from atmosphere. Acid rain reacts with volcanic rock dust to form carbonates. Carbonates wash into the ocean while it helps combat ocean acidification. So means we are growing good food, we are purifying the air, and we are stopping the ocean acidification. So that is the beauty of enhanced weathering than other methods. So in this cartoon, I am showing, if you see this block, it is enhanced weathering on land, means we are putting basaltic dust, or I will say in detail why basaltic dust later, some silicate rock powders into the agriculture farms, and they are helping in capturing carbon and growing nutritious food. So same there, what is the washed off part reaches the ocean, there it helps to deacidify the ocean. Or there are some methods directly they are putting some alkaline stuff spraying into the oceans. That is ocean alkalinity enhancement. So ocean alkalinity enhancement is directly putting powders into the ocean, or what we are putting onto the land, that is getting washed out and going into the ocean. And there it is giving a very good service, because our oceans are becoming acidic. So when this alkaline material reach there, they try to neutralize that acidity. And when they try to neutralize the acidity, those microorganisms, it is phytoplanktons, it is diatoms, forams, and lot of other sea creatures. So they use that and for their this body building, and the shells slowly after their death bury and become part of the ocean shell, ocean floor. So acidification is creating problem from them, because those shells are getting thinned. Means it is a lot of research is their diatoms, forams, and other tiny creatures in the oceans, their shells are becoming thin because of acidification. So that acidification is getting diluted if we use alkaline stuff on land as well in oceans. So here again, I will show this enhanced weathering, how beautiful it is for agriculture and how beautiful it is for oceans. First, enhanced weathering, if we see in the agro systems, when we spray alkaline material, mostly the basalts. Why basalts? I will tell you later. So when we spread basalt dust with other compost, biochar, or ash meals in our farms, so almost we give most of it to the soil. So those nutrients help in very healthy growth of plants, roots, and their yield crop. It doesn't help that much only. Every molecule which we spread that dust on the agriculture farm, more molecules means more reaction with atmospheric CO2, more capturing of carbon. And after that, there is some calcium, magnesium ions which are getting flushed into the oceans. There also they play a role. They stop ocean acidification. They stop. They help in the growth of diatoms, foraminifera, corals. So this is ocean alkalinity and enhanced weathering. How beneficial they are on land as well as marine environment in capturing carbon. And ocean acidification stopping is giving some other benefits, because most of the enhanced weathering which we do on land, that material reaches to the coastal oceans. And coastal oceans are very important because they are the fishing zones, they are most of our economic activities are there. So we need to preserve them. They should be deacidified, then only we can get fish and other marine resources for our survival. So in this way, if we see enhanced weathering, it is doing a great service to some of the United Nations development goals. So goal number 13 is climate action. Goal number 12 is resource consumption and production. Goal number 14 is life below water. 15 is life on land. SDG is zero hunger, goal number 2. So these are some goals where it is helping directly. And there are so many other goals where it is helping indirectly. Now I will show some benefits of this remineralization or enhanced weathering on the agro systems. So there is a slow release of nutrients. Even though we are making very fine dust from the rocks and spreading in the agriculture form, still it is in the silicates. And their humic acid and other carbonic acid from the atmosphere, they have to react with those silicates. It is a very slow process, means there is a slow release of nutrients from those dust particles for crops. And this way, when we give naturally those particles, nutrients from powders of rocks, we doesn't need more heavy doses of synthetic fertilizers. So this slow release, what are the pilots going on globally? So it has shown good results. There is a nutrient uptake by plants and there are high yields. Some 20% higher yield has been noted in some farms. This enhanced weathering, it balances the pH of soil, because if we see our atmosphere rain, they are also acidic. When the acid rains fall on our soils, definitely acidity of our soils increase. So there our soil acidity is also neutralized by this enhanced weathering on land. And when we make this neutral, this pH, so there is a very good growth of humus, and that humus means it is very good to prevent soil erosion. There is resistance to diseases, resistance to pests, and these things will reduce use of pesticides. This method, enhanced weathering, it is scalable at very low cost. There is income for farmers as well as miners, because if we have high yield, farmers will get benefit, and if they doesn't need heavy doses of pesticides and fertilizers, it will benefit them. And now the food eaten by all, it is nutrient dense, because most of the macro micronutrients supplied by rocks are deficient in synthetic fertilizers. So that way it reduced the burden on medical expenses also. And all the mining dumps, which is waste lying into the mines, that is used, it is giving additional income to our mining companies. Nutrition dense food reduces medical expenses. There are some benefits of remineralization in marine system also. It neutralizes ocean acidification. Less fertilizer on land means there will be less flush off of the fertilizers to the oceans. There means there will be less eutrophication, means we are creating less dead zones. This process helps prevention of thinning of shells, marine organic organism shells. There is a thriving coastal fishing zones, very good economy for our coastal population. That improves economy of our fishermen. Now the question is, which type of rock dust is good? Silicate rocks contain almost most of the nutrients that they are considered good for enhanced weathering. So either we are using remineralization in agro systems or in the marine system. So we are not only giving the benefits to our people for food and other benefits we discussed, we are giving big service to the planet, which is not all only going to help humans, but all the forms of life. Means the carbon removal through agro systems or through marine systems, it is having one big benefit, what we call carbon credit. So carbon credit is simply, if you see left side, there is an industry, it is polluting, and somebody is doing vegetation, biomass growth, and he is trying to reduce some part of the toxic gases from air. The polluter is giving some money to the person who is depolluting. And now it is becoming a business model, and this is called carbon credit. So this way, carbon removal, and if our marine people, fishermen, farmers, miners, we can give some extra income in their hands also. There is a term called carbon credit market, and how big it is, I will show you. So now if we see the global statistics, in 2023, it was $2.4 billion, which is going to be $21.7 billion in 2023. So there will be some annual growth of 27% per year in this market. So it is a huge market. Means there is left side, some people are doing service to the Mother Earth and they are getting paid, and this way we are creating jobs. Now, what are the sectors which are most polluting? Power, energy, aviation, transportation, building, industrial. Means these are the industries, these are the people who will pay. And what are the methods we can do capturing or removing? We can avoid or reduce projects are for that. How to avoid? For example, instead of 20 people coming to office in 20 cars, let we have one bus. Instead of using 4 fans in your home, let we use one. Whenever we need, do judicious use of resources, that is avoidance. And there is reduction projects, means people are doing some work to make people aware. Removal and sequestration, it is one method, and there it is nature-based as well as technology-based. The enhanced weathering, I discussed it, it is nature-based. Afforestation is nature-based. So these projects are there, and there are technological also, because those air capturing through machines and pumping deep inside, there we involve machines. Now, if you see the segment of this carbon credit business, forestry and land use, means this agro business or forestry business, it is going to grow 2% by 9% per year globally, means because it has been noted, it has been understood, it is one of the sustainable and sustainable method. Now, if we come our part of the world, Asia Pacific, here 31.5% will be the annual growth. Why? Because our part of world, it is almost tropical, having some of the beautiful lands rich in agro minerals, some of the depleted soils, and very bright sunshine and very good rainfall. So that is why these are some points which are making attractive our part of the world to earn more in the carbon credit business. So now, is this all backed by science? So these are some papers. Here is Dr. Ratan Lal. He is the leading soil scientist of the world. It is the paper by him published in Science, how soil carbon sequestration is going to impact the climate change and food security. Beerling in 28 has published it in Nature, farming with crops and rocks to address global climate, food and soil security. And there is one more paper by Cadenza, substantial growth, drawdown potential of enhanced rock weathering in UK. Polal et al. Has potential of CO2 removal from enhanced rock weathering by ecosystem response to powdered rock. So these are some books. Agrogeology, there is one book, Rocks for Crops. And my senior mentor, Mr. Dr. Tom, who will be then speaking later, the book written by him, Geotherapy. So he is saying geoengineering is not a concept. Geotherapy is a concept. Means we have to give some healing to the Mother Earth. A very beautiful book. Even he has gifted me one copy, and I had read it, and it has inspired me a lot and made me that, yeah, we need to seriously think on this, how badly this science is required. So there is one book, The Survival of Civilization. One book is Bread from Stones. So these are some relevant works. Now I will show here. This is Professor Mink. He is in Copenhagen University, and he is speaking at Cairns TEDx. And here he is promoting the place where he has been born. He is from Greenland. That Greenland mud is going to fertilize the world. So what he is saying, we need to remineralize on vast scale, remineralize the deltas, deacidify the oceans. Greenland's Perspective Initiative partnership to create food security in the tropics. So, and he has now made one company, it is Rock Floor Company, and they are now scaling in Europe, bringing this fertile basaltic mud from the Greenland, which is pulverized, made rock floor by the glacial activity. And they have got very promising results in improving the crop cover, biomass, greenery, and food. Dr. From last 2 years, when I am reading this slowly, slowly, I then thought, okay, what should we do for our part of the world? So then in collaboration with Thomas Gorio, Jonah, and James Jordan, we thought, let me start and write a review paper on India's biogeochemical capacity. And I took the lead and I wrote first, and then Tom was there and he helped me to refine it. Then it got published in one of the good journal, Environmental Geochemistry and Health. So then it got appreciation from Dr. Lal. So that was a great honor for me to get appreciation from Dr. Lal that Ishfaq, the work like this is badly repaired in your part of the world. So if we see, I am showing this graphical abstract, it is very simple to understand. I am showing rock dust, compost, biochar, and their chemistries. So if this all is mixed and put it into our agrosystems, it will capture carbon from the air, it will give us good food, it will give us nutritious food, it will give, they're all the upgoing arrows, they are the benefits, high nutrient density, high crop yield, improved crop resilience, longer growing season, high groundwater recharge, flood reduction, increased river flow. There is a vibrant soil ecosystem, water retention, beneficial microbes, low acidic soils, enhanced soil texture, soil organic carbon accumulation. These are the benefits, and here we are showing what is the India's capacity. And now I will show this slide, why I'm showing it is present global population distribution. And if you come to our part of the world, it is the most populous. Means big challenge for us is to feed more and more people, but with nutritious food. Because if we say junk food, if we go to KFC or Pizza Hut, but food is not only that is junk, the food we eat also is junk. Now you will say how? When we grow food, we use synthetic nitrate, phosphate, and potash only, and most of the macro and micronutrients are not present in those fertilizers. We are getting very big size of our crops, but what we are eating is not balanced. So there is a term, hidden hunger. Most of the developed world is also having hidden hunger because most of the micronutrients are deficient in the food. And John Hopkins recently had given some studies. They are saying so many diseases are linked with those deficiency of micronutrients. So now I will come to the biogeochemical capacity of India. Now, if we see the soil map. So this soil map is not there by default. There is some science, there is some geology, there is some climate which has decided where which soil is. So if we see this black, our black soil in Maharashtra or north of this Great Plains of India where we are having alluvial soils. These are the fertile soils of India. And if we go to extreme west, we are having some desert soils. And if we come extreme east or south, we are having laterite soils. We are having red, yellow soils, which are mostly on the granitic, metamorphic, or latitic terrains. So these eastern, southern, and extreme western soils are not good, as well as our mountain soils are not good compared to the soils which are on the Great Plain part, as well as in the Deccan Trap part. So here is the science. Some part of the soils are giving good yield. So can we make our bad soils like them? This is the concept. So now I will come again to the geology of India. So most of the geologists are familiar with it. Deccan Trap, it is a huge, large igneous province, basaltic province. And in east and southern India, most of our terrain is granitic, metamorphosed, or lateritized. And if we go to the Great Plains of India, there we are having fertile plains. And in north, in the mountains, we are having some mountains of different geologies. In nutshell, we will say Great Plain of India and Maharashtra part, they are fertile for agriculture. So means geology of India and the climate of India. So now you see the climate, if our Western Ghat or Eastern Ghats or the northeastern India in the green belt, they are the areas getting very high rainfall. And inland, there is some arid part and some are humid, some are semi-arid. So geology plus climate decides how the soils of India are. Because because it is the weathering of the rocks by the action of climate, soils are formed. Now these soils decide biology. If you see this biomass map of India, you see UP, central India, Maharashtra, Gujarat, almost the area covered by Great Plains, including Punjab, or in the Deccan Trap area, biomass is more abundant. If you go to extreme East India, North India, or South, or to the desert or to the North, there is decrease in biomass. Means soils and climate are deciding biomass. So now if we see the population of humans, while there is more thriving environment, we are also more there. So you see Great Plains, you see our central, it is more populous compared to East. So this elliptical which I had made, this highlighted area, this highlighted area, this highlighted area, and this, very good correlation is there.
Some problems.
Your screen is not visible to us.
The screen is not visible to them.
Yeah, that's what happened here. Yes.
It was come alone.
Now it has come now.
It's just three
now. It's about 3 minutes. Just last slide was.
Sorry for that. Now we are going to rectify it. Please bear with us. You ask them.
This one, you slide one more.
In geology, then this one.
Okay. After this one, after this one.
Is the screen visible now? Our virtual audiences.
Yes, it's visible. Yes. Yes, visible.
Thank you, Dr. Iswar. Please go ahead.
So now this highlighted area, they are having some correlation. Means geology is not that promising for the growth of vegetation. It is deciding so many other factors. So now I will show one slide. This is from Deccan Trap basalts in Maharashtra. So the previous what I showed, it is giving lot of inspiration for that. Now you will say how. If you see, these are Deccan Traps of our Maharashtra area. There are some vertical cliffs where from material during monsoon is getting eroded and it goes down and little bit on some flat surfaces, some part gets deposited and it forms soil. And see on these vertical cliffs where you have little bit flat surfaces, vegetation is growing. Though rainfall is very seasonal, not any irrigation, not any fertilizer. See how nature is winning if the conditions are suitable. So this is now giving us a motivation. We can do in our depleted soil the same thing, because these basalts are considered most fertile. Not our basalts, whole of the global basalts. And this slide is showing us how there is some stability for the soil. It does its job and brings life. Here I am showing some photographs. On top I am showing, this is the glacial Panjal trap powders in the Himalayas generated by the glacial activity. It was captured, one of our GSI team, they were doing glaciology work on the mighty Himalayan areas, and there they were in the summers and glacier was little bit melted and some lakes were exposed. See how fine glacial floor is created there. So it is in the vast abundance there. And when we come to down to the valley of Kashmir, there we are having some big lakes, Wular Dal, and most of the sediments filled there, they are coming from mountains surrounded by in Kashmir Valley, and those mountains are mostly made of Panjal traps, and some are limestone. Means there is very good stuff in the lakes, whether they are very small lakes in the hills or down in the valleys. And similar stuff from different parts of the Himalayas had worked and made Great Plains of India in our quaternary time. So this another photograph, it is one stone quarry in Maharashtra, because Maharashtra almost is whole occupied by basalts, and there is a lot of construction pobus material is being mined, and lot of fine dust is available there, which is of no use for ours. That is not of sand size or gravel size or bigger size. It is very fine. It is there in the piles of no use. And if that dust and those muds of the Himalayas are brought into the agriculture system, they can give very good results. So down I am showing some desert soils which are considered very poor, and some South Indian soils, laterite soils, which had been depleted by excessive rainfalls from a long time, and they had lost their nutrition. So desert soils doesn't only need fertilization by rock powders. Yeah, water is also a challenge. But if we come to this east or the southern India, where we are having most of our red, yellow and lateritic soils, our rock powders can do the magic. The top is some nutrient rich rock powders, and below are some nutrient poor soils. So now if you see this cartoon on top left, it is not all rocks or minerals we use. Mostly alkaline, mostly basaltic are being used. Why? Because their chemistry is like that. They have most of the macro and micronutrients. So those rocks are their application. What is the dosage? There is some science going on per hectare, how much we should spread, and what should be the ideal particle size, which will be easy for our humic acids to digest further so that there will be release of nutrients. Then what are the modifications required? Do we need biomass, compost and charcoal to add? So it is also must. Then what is the climate and what is the weather of the area, where we will get fast weathering results and where we don't get weathering results? What is the soil type and what is the duration? This all is involved in this enhanced rock weathering. So this is some sort of cartoon for showing size of enhanced weathering. So definitely now it is very well understood how much important role geologists have to play in this process. So now I will come to show one this soil. So when soil comes in mind of most of the people, they say it is some organic matter, but that is wrong. An ideal soil is only 5% organic matter, 25% is water, and 25% is air. And the rest is mineral matter. So means 45% is coming from rocks. Rock weathering produces soils for corrective measures. Documenting the elemental concentration and their variance is required. Because soils, how good or bad they are, we can know only when we can map them, analyze them. NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. These are the nutrients very well studied. Most of the even common man knows potash, urea, phosphate. But there are other essential macronutrients, calcium, magnesium, sulfur, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen. And if you see this oxygen, hydrogen, it is our water is giving, and nitrogen also is coming from our water, or hydrogen, or some are coming from air. So air is also providing nutrients, water is also providing nutrients, plus organic matter is providing mostly nitrogen and carbon, and other all or most of them which we discussed are coming from rocks. So studying macronutrients other than NPK, micronutrients, boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, nickel, zinc, and most of the toxic element in our soils coming from fertilizers or pesticides, they are not very well understood. Many soils have significant level of toxicity or deficiency. Both affect the yield. Agriculture productivity is affected by both, either it is more or less of any nutrient. Now, if you see a healthy soil aid in growth of healthy plants. It reduces atmospheric CO2 levels by enhanced weathering, that capturing I showed earlier, and stabilizes climate change. Food's nutritional value improves health and lowers the need for the cost of medical treatment. So this is from USDA, United States cartoon. They are showing in 65, one apple the nutrition we was getting now is being provided by five apples. That means we had depleted our soils from nutrients. We had exhausted our soils by excessive cropping. Now, what is required? Mapping of nutrient-rich and nutrient-deficient soils, soil pH, and other soil parameters, texture of soil, fineness, grain size, and so many other physical parameters, as well as identifying agro-mineral-rich provinces is required for mining, for enhancing the health of poor soils, particularly in tropical India and eastern India. And this all we can help with the geochemical surveys. So now I will come here to National Geochemical Mapping Program of Geological Survey of India. Here we are doing pan-India work at topo sheet levels. In every topo sheet, we are collecting samples, we are analyzing them. Those samples are surface sediments. We are collecting from streams, slope wash, and those surface sediments we are analyzing up to 64 elements. So this work we are carrying at the topo sheet level. Two officers are being deployed and they do one FSP and they generate one geochemical mapping for one topo sheet in one field season. So I got involved in this project in Kashmir Himalayas and in our Karnataka. So this
No, upper, upper, me over. 14. 14, 14. Yes. Maximum.
There is problem with some display, huh? Excuse for one second.
Yes. Thank you.
I worked for NGCM project in Kashmir Valley and in northern Karnataka. So we also generated a big package of elements from our stream and slope wash. So I cannot show all the elements, but I'm just showing one element, arsenic. So first one slide, which is bluish, middle one. So it is from Kashmir Valley and there most of the agriculture, it is under apple cultivation and rice farms. And now in our this Dharwar area of Karnataka, it is mostly under mango farm or sugarcane. So one thing I noticed there, irrespective of the geology, arsenic is two more. Means arsenic is in our agro systems, either it is in the Himalayan state or in the peninsular. Definitely it would be in other parts of the country also, because the pesticides, fertilizers we are using for shiny food, healthy food, high yields, it is adding a lot of toxic chemicals also, and see the arsenic. Irrespective of geological boundaries, it is available, it is distributed in where we are having intensive agriculture. The areas where we are having more reddish spots, they are under more cultivation, and other areas are some forest areas where we are having less arsenic. So from this work, I published some papers from this both. This NGCM Pan India, it is almost in the final stage. If you go to the country map, there the whitish part, it is left, and we are doing GCM there also. And very soon we are going to finish all the work on topo sheet levels. Now, what should be the next? Next should be Pan India element maps for all 64 elements. Those elements maps can help us in the national policies for mineral exploration, for agriculture, for environment, for health, for sustainability. Now, if you see this plot, things too deficient or too more toxic or not good. We need an optimum of balanced, adequate quantity for ideal production. So means plant performance is good when there is adequate nutrition. So means this geochemical mapping, either it is on topo sheet or we are going to compile, make it a pan India. So this will definitely help us identify the provinces which are deficient, which are balanced, or which are poor. So accordingly, then we can plan where which fertilizer, where which amendment is required. So that will also greatly help to improve the yield as well as the nutrition of the food, as well as the income of the country. Because still, I think agriculture is still the backbone of Indian economy. So now here I'm showing some USGS maps. USGS map for calcium, potassium, and phosphorus. So they had almost finished it, compiled it, they're all topo sheet level, and they are having maps like this, country level, and it is very clear. Some western part for calcium and eastern part showing how the it is rich or more, or how the phosphorus is high in the central, going towards east or extreme west, it is less. Accordingly, you see phosphorus is having almost same distribution as calcium. So it will help their ministries, their governments to further formulate the policies. So these are some forges, means European geosurveys. It is not a one country, it is almost most of the Europe. They had finished their geochemistry and they had compiled whole of the Europe together, most of the Western Europe, and you see their maps, either it is phosphorus, potassium, or copper, how it is distributed, and they are using these for the European level, European Union level, they are using the maps. So these are some maps from China, similar some distribution. And these are some maps from Australia. So if we go Australia, left side maps, they are the elements, and right side there is soil pH, weathering, soil classification, radio elements, ecological risks, minerals. Means when we have a big package of elemental maps, we can derive so many themes. One can be the national level pH map, one can be the one national level weathering map, one can be the soil classification map, having distribution of all the micro and macronutrients. Our soil people from agriculture, they have soil maps, but most of the micronutrients are not there in their maps. So similarly, if we see radioactive minerals, where they are, or any sort of mineral, or what are the disasters happening by geogenic or anthropogenic toxins in the soils, that's all is possible when we have country level geochemical maps. Pan India map sharing, where it can benefit. We can share it at our central level with different ministries, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Fertilizer, Ministry of Ecology, Environment, Remote Sensing, and so many other ministries, even Ministry of Health, Urban Development, Labor Ministry, Rural Development, Sanitation, these all can get benefited from these elemental maps. Similarly, at state level, all can benefit. Research institutes, universities can use the data. NGOs who are working in health, environment, food, soil, water, sanitation, they can use our data. So we need maps like these, then we can do this work. Now, it will not stop here. There is one more project, Chemical Earth. Just like we're having Google Earth, you rotate on your laptop Earth where you want to zoom, scan, see all the terrain, lakes, roads, cities, whatsoever you want. So like that, one project is going on that we have to develop not only Pan-India map or not any Pan-USA map, Chemical Earth. So all of the continents of the land slowly are being mapped geochemically. Advanced countries, developed world has almost finished it. Developing world is doing, and most of the underdeveloped world are lagging behind, and it is the responsibility of most of the advanced countries to help them to map their countries as soon as possible, because till date, everyone is not safe, no one is safe. We need to know what is happening in Africa, we need to know in Arabia, most those parts which don't have this capacity, so we have to help them. In IUGS, International Union of Geological Sciences, they are having one program mapping the geochemistry of earth and land surface. There is a commission on global geochemical baseline, which is having this big vision, this big project in their mind. So their website, if you want to see, there is global geochemical baseline. They had made grids, which just like we are having grids 2x2 or 1x1 kilometer in our work. So they are Pan India map, it is not going to benefit us, but at global level, how? Either it is UNDP or United Nations Development Program, United Nations Environmental Program, World Health Organization, UNICEF, World Food Program, Food and Agriculture Organization, International Food and Agriculture Department, UNESCO, United Nations Development Organization, NGOs, globally. They all can benefit this data, and benefit can come back to us. In the global policies, we will get something back and we will contribute something for the globe. So now last year, our this G20, it was a big slogan, mission, one earth, one family, one future. That means if this thing really we want to happen globally, then all the countries have to contribute and make this chemical earth a success. Sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Sustainable goals, 17 United Nations sustainable goals, address key global challenges and call for actions by all countries. So these are 17 sustainable goals where our chemical earth can be of huge benefit. I think every goal, if you see, read it, there is some direct or indirect help. Now I will come again. This was if we map, we can identify provinces in country or world. Now which rocks are good for enhanced weathering? So little bit I will put light on that. So if we see basalt, if we powder basalt and 4 ton of basalt, if we spread, it can sequester 1 ton of carbon dioxide. And where we have in India, we have in Panjal traps, we have Deccan traps, we have Rajmahal traps, and we have many metabasalts in southern India also. And maybe so many small, small patches will be in the different parts of the country which are not under our focus. Number two beautiful rock is the wollastonite. Because wollastonite, if we spread only 1.6 ton, it captures 1 ton of CO2. But wollastonite is very rare on earth, very less, and it is composition mostly calcium silicate. It is very good for capturing or removing carbon, but as an agrogeological nutrient benefits are not that more. But still, it is a climate tech mineral, which can help in decarbonizing the atmosphere. And we have wollastonites in Rajasthan, Gujarat, and Tamil Nadu. One more rock, carbonatite. Nowadays, huge discussion for reefs. So this is also a very good source. And in Canada, they are having Spanish carbonatite complex. They are mining it and using in the agriculture. And not only using in Canada, they are selling it globally for the agriculture. Even they have an office in our Mumbai. So what it is very good source for carbonate mineral silicates, very good source for phosphorus, calcium, magnesium. We have some small deposits of carbonatites in Gujarat, Karnataka, and Meghalaya. For potassium, S-type granites are considered very good. So southern terrain, if don't have Ca, Mg, and other, but K is abundant here. So we have to identify more and more S-types because they are more rich in our potassium. All the muds of lakes, rivers, they are also very rich, especially if they are in the alkaline terrains. Mine waste throughout the country, it needs to be investigated, analyzed, its chemistry, its grain size and other properties. And it needs to be checked how good it is for enhanced weathering or agriculture. Use of enhanced rock weathering to remove CO2 and naturally enhance soil health represents a potential win-win for farmers and climate. It is Professor Yeet in Newcastle, he is saying this because he is working in this field. Enhanced rock weathering is a carbon dioxide removal technology and attracting funding from Microsoft, Google, USAID, Oak Foundation, Belarus, and so many more are coming. And we should expect what are our in-house, our Infosys, our Wipro, our Tata's, our Reliance. So we should have projects and they should fund. That means we will create more jobs, more greenery, more bright future for our future generations. Now, why this enhanced weathering can be done? If we see almost to the area very near to equator or tropics or bordering of the tropics is the very ideal. As we move to the poles, which is too cool, too ice covered, not promising. So effectiveness of enhanced weathering, if you see, if we see our part of the world, so 1025 is the capacity to capture carbon dioxide per ton of rock, means our area, Europe, and some part of tropical Africa, tropical North America or South America, they are having very ideal conditions to scale up the enhanced weathering to reach net zero as soon as fast. This map, it is showing geology of the world. And here, if we see that small pinkish light there, these are the large igneous provinces, or you can say the traps or basalts of the world. So we are having in Siberia one Siberian trap. In India, we are having Deccan trap. In Atlantic, we are having Iceland, Greenland, and some are in the North, South America. Now, but here, Siberian trap is almost ice covered. Iceland is also ice covered. Greenland is seasonally open. So means African, Indian, and South American. These traps have the potential to fertilize the world. Now, if we come our Deccan trap, it is very near to our west coast. Last time I was talking with this rock floor company, Copenhagen, they told we are bringing rock, dust, or mud from Greenland. So I told you are bringing from Greenland and putting into your Europe. So is it not becoming, it is not sustainable because via ships you bring. They told till we are transporting in ships, it is not that polluting. But when we enter into the trucks and roads, definitely pollution is increasing. Means we have an advantage, our west coast from Gujarat to Goa or the northern border of Maharashtra, where we have the spread of this, there are so many ports which are linked, means shipping it within country or other parts of the world is very easily available. So it can be a big business in future. So here, one more thing is inspiring that I had put. It is not of a geologist business, but it is an inspiration. So here, India set to export 192 metric tons of cow dung to Kuwait. So Kuwait is buying our cow dung for what? Because they are putting this cow dung in their date farms and it is making their dates more healthy, more nutritious and yield. So they are using our cow dung to improve their fertility of soils. So now imagine whole of the Arabian countries if use the cow dung. And if we can ship cow dung from India, why not basalts? This is the trend for cow dung. So now it is some 10,000. This you can say 10,000 tons, and it will go to 70,000 in 27. Means this market is growing. So now again here I will show this. Why all need to give compost to other countries? Let we bring some rock dust. Let we bring some biochar because we have a lot of biomass. We have a lot of rock resources. And we have definitely cow dung resource. Means this is all the biogeochemical potential of India. And this we can use in-house within own country, within our neighboring countries, and it can help most parts of the world where shipping is very cheap. Now in this part of the world is a highlighted area. If we focus on that, means our Deccan trap basalt is definitely going to help fertilize this part at least. With very minimum area if we want to cover. So now one country is doing better than us, and it is Brazil. So now, is Brazil an ideal model for us? Yes. Brazil is emerging leader for remineralization in the research and public policy arena. Brazil maintained their fertilizer crisis due to Ukraine-Russia war with their local rock powders. How the beauty. There are some laws, some decrees they had made. Rock dust as a fertilizer law 12.890/2013. Decree certificate 8.384/2014 means government of Brazil has allowed them to use the rock powders in their fields. They has used and got the benefits. Now, what is message for us? Take home message. Brazil and India both have tropical climate, some of the finest basic rocks and vast agricultural fields. So definitely Brazil model is very ideal for us. So this is a photograph. These are the people from Brazilian Agriculture Research Corp, Geological Survey of Brazil, and some other co-researchers from Cameroon and Uganda. They are trying to help them in Africa to remineralize their soils using the rock power. Now, if so, if we see this enhanced weathering or mineralization, carbon mineralization to capture CO2, this science is growing. You see Google Scholar mineral carbonation highlighted and fast growing research, and see how fast Google Scholar citations, publications, means it is catching worldwide. Fastest growing research because it is badly required for the planet. Now, how, what to do? So if we see a basalt mine production, then we see distribution. We need awareness among the people, science and development, going to different type of farms, doing service, transport, and doing mathematics of business, mathematics of pollution, benefits. This all needs really a R&D. So now, what enhanced weathering research in India need? So there is a way ahead for us. For each significant rock, soil, crop, climate system, an optimized application of national rock powder resource must be determined through a national R&D program. Nation's capacity to adapt to mounting challenges of population expansion and climate change would be significantly improved by this R&D program. So this is the take-home message. So there, now this is some inspiration again from the globe. You can see how some parts are being mined, some geologists working in the mining areas, some farmers spreading the rock dust in the pilots, and even in India, in our Mati Carbon is doing there, our some people, they are spreading through hands, and some scientists observing in the field, in the lab, and some SEM images seeing how carbon is getting captured by the rock dust. This R&D is going on, even some greenhouse experiments are there in the down figure. So that means this work is going on and it needs to be scaled up, and we have also to do it. There is some work going on, some startups are coming globally. Mati Carbon is one, they are working in India. They are bringing Raj Mahal trap basalts and spreading in our Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand area rice farms. And they, I talked with them, they told, yes, we are seeing a change in biomass. Greenery is more, length of the crop is more, and some yield is also increasing. So similarly, Andu is one they are doing in UK farms. There is one in Planet they are doing in Brazil. And this is the flux they are doing in Africa. You see there, their pilot, left side, it is a maize spread by rock, and right side, it is a normal. See how much change is there when we put rock dust. There is improve in the growth of plants, and definitely there will be improve in the yield. So these are some inspiring slides making us to think to do this science. So again, at the end, I would try to say, our WHO head is saying there is no vaccine for climate change. Yes, there is no. But CO2 capture, enhanced rock weathering, and growing food. Can this become a vaccine? I feel it will. So this is my answer to Sir Director General HOD. Sir, yes, carbon sequestration can be a vaccine. But it is up to all of us. I alone cannot say anything. So this is all. Thank you very much for listening.
Friends, you have been listening to a wonderful talk by Dr. Isfak. In fact, everything is positive in his talk. I've seen, because we are crying about climate change, weather, so many things, but you are bringing them as a positive effect of
solutions.
The agriculture, the farmers, to the industrialists, to the policy makers,
miners,
everybody. It's all positive. So thank you so much for that informative talk, quite elaborative talk also. I think people have enjoyed and got benefited also. In fact, the diagrams, the cartoons, the figures, they are outstanding. Very, very clear. They convey a message, you need not speak at all. Such a diagrams you have prepared. Really, I'm very thankful to you for that. Now we are coming to the open discussion. Before I call upon any other audiences, I call Dr. Thomas Moriu, with whom Dr. Isfak has interacted and worked, to give his opinion on the subject.
Because he is the person who has motivated me to go into deep in this science, and whatsoever I have delivered, it is because of his mentorship I am doing.
Wonderful.
I was not lucky enough to go for postdoc, but I did a virtual postdoc indirectly working with him, and I did here.
So nice. Dr. Thomas, please, your views on the subject. You are welcome. Can you hear Dr. Thomas?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You are very clear. Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I just want to say very quickly, it was a pleasure to hear your talk. I mean, I just want to say to everyone else that Dr. Mir has presented a really brilliant strategy for India to use its own underutilized natural resources to provide safe food, save money, save soil, and reverse climate change altogether. And this is, I think, a brilliant strategy. I think the key to it is clearly understanding the trace metals, because those are critical limitations to agricultural productivity if they're too low, and critical toxins to public health if they're too high. So therefore, they have to be analyzed very accurately. And since Dr. Mir is the expert on high resolution analysis of these metals that have historically been very difficult to analyze because they're present in low concentrations, I think his strategy for mapping the trace elements out all across India really can provide an integrated strategy for sustainable national development. And I hope that the Geological Survey of India takes the lead in implementing the strategy proposed for very detailed trace element mapping across the entire country to figure out which areas have the safest soils, the most productive soils, and which ones need to be avoided. So this is a wonderful strategy, and I hope that first India can take the lead in implementing it on a national scale, and two, encouraging other countries to do the same. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas, for that wonderful words and also a kind of policy
thank you, sir.
Guidance.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. In fact, what Dr. Isfak was telling, not only we have huge Deccan traps, we do have certain ophiolite beds. Exactly. I worked in ophiolite in Ladakh, and they are
Ultramafics are a little bit demotivating because in agriculture they increase the heavy metal content. So that is why, but still olivines are used in the beaches, in the roads, in the urban setups. They also do some service as our greenery of urban areas do.
True. So what I wanted to say is we have other alternatives.
Other resources also, rocks also. Because olivine also is being used.
Yeah. It is now open for discussion. Dr.
Yeah,
Vishwanath. Dr. Vishwanath has raised his hand. Please go ahead.
Dr. Dr. Ishfaq, first let me congratulate you on the excellent presentation. And like Dr. Krishnamurthy was saying, you know, the cartoons were fantastic. You know, it was like seeing a movie rather than listening to a presentation.
Thank you, sir. The cartoons were self-explanatory.
Now I have two questions. You know, I stay near a Ulasnet mine. So there's a lot of Ulasnet waste also there. What is the size of the powder which can be sprayed onto the fields?
Sir, Ulasnet, good thing is that it reacts fast, fine as much as possible. Clay and silt size can be tried in pilots. Okay. So if there are some small pilots in the area, if a small parcel of land is spread with different sizes, and within 1 year we can know which is having more good results. Because of this quantification of grain size and how much is the capacity per tonnage, it is still going on. A lot of work is going on. Big universities, they are trying to make it because it is a very new science. Exactly, a fine this silt clay size is good. But if it is too fine, that also creates problems. But there is no porosity into the soils, then that aeration becomes a problem. And if it is too sandy, that is also a problem. But we have to give it a trial. So different pilots of different sizes on small parcels of land, if given a try, not bad.
Thank you.
So where the Ulasnet powders are?
This is Sirohi district in Rajasthan.
Great, sir. We can see some agriculture university, if get involved, they can do in their campuses. If small scale, some part is shared with them, they can spread and see what is the result. And it can be monitored every month, how the biomass is, greenery, size, everything, how it is growing in different size. The way others are doing, that top down, they are doing in Germany. So many are doing like this. They are having pot experiments. They are doing polyhouse experiments, different sizes, different compositions, and seeing the results.
Yeah, nice idea. I'm in Gandhinagar, so I can talk to agriculture university people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir, Dr. Vishwanath. Among our physically present colleagues, is there any query you want to seek from Dr. Ishfaq?
Possibility of DAX, we have two DAX systems. We can utilize the model in a country.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
One thing which is that the economic viability of the host involved in polarization, and that is one thing which we have.
So that is, first it is promoted wherever we have the fines available, let we use that. So if we use that, it will do some service to the environment, and slowly then there are methods being developed how we can use clean energies in polarization. So slowly that can be brought into the picture, and definitely there are so many small dikes throughout the country. We need to map them, their chemistry we should know, because transportation, if we stop, maybe then if there is pulverization cost, we can negotiate. So it needs
can be useful, yes, you know, crushing and
huge R&D. And if hydropower is somewhere nearby, maybe some hydro mills, the way earlier people were grinding our cereals. That way, if we have some very high density, means that Mohs scale of hardness, very hard grinders, which can pulverize the fines. So these things needs to be experimented. And it is not only GSI, Ministry of Mines. I think it needs involvement of, it is an interdisciplinary, few ministries need to get involved in. But the problem is same, food and climate. That is for all of us. And our New Delhi is getting choked. Everyone knows how horrible it is becoming to live there. And now heat is too high everywhere. I think 80% of the India is under the extreme heat. So these are the problems. Yes, climate is changing, and we are getting signals from poles to tropics everywhere. Thank you, sir.
Dr. Lingaraju.
Yes, sir. Please, sir.
Because we have been exploiting soil, we are exploiting forest, and now we are working on stone soils. Nature has its own method of making the ecosystem. But whereas these methods, shortcut methods, may spoil the environment for that. I am not afraid.
So
for example, people are thinking of getting what we call it moisture, air moisture. What will be the climatic impact if it goes beyond the limit? So
sir, very excellent question. Sir, I will say like this, if we see what we did, it was against nature. All the fossil fuel, all the minerals, all the modernity, it has choked the planet. Microplastic is in our blood, it is in the oceans, it is in the poles, even in Himalayas. So whatsoever we did, it is all wrong. And now we had got diseased. So it's diseased body, let we keep it to die, or let we do some cut, do some surgery and try to overheal it. It is like that. It is a therapy, some sort of healing. And it is little bit sustainable because first we don't promote you go break the rocks, polarize them. There are huge fines available in our mining sites, in the basins near to the alkaline rocks. Like I said, Greenland ice mud, they don't break rocks. Nature is doing for them every year. That glacial rock flow, they bring there. Now, what is the challenge? They are trying to, how with low emissions, they can bring it to most of the world. Low cost, low emissions. So for us, if we see Great Plains of India, they are very near to Himalayas. So sustainably transporting them is possible. And in Deccan Traps we have, either it is the north of Deccan Traps, south or east India, it is possible. Means it needs, we have to calculate the costs. It should not be more than emissions. It should be less than emissions. If it is less than emissions, definitely there are, and their results are becoming promising. Because it is not, I am saying Newcastle is there, Yale is there, Lawrence Berkeley is there, some top institutes, MIT, Harvard, there people are doing this. And they're promoting, yes, we have to do it. And if the business as usual, we want to continue, definitely we have to remove CO2 from atmosphere. And this is one method. And if we sequester a lot of CO2, maybe our business as usual, we can continue. Because we are focusing on lithium, cobalt, and so many. But they are in trace amounts in the earth. And maybe within 50 years, we will spoil all the geostocks. So then what to do? At least as this time we are saying our electric, this steam engine or diesel engine or petrol engine, we have to convert this whole technology into the electric. So that means whatsoever existing technology, we have to abandon it. So then how much more material we need? If we are trying to continue fossil fuel burning with some capturing, let we continue with the resources, the business as usual, it is possible. But it is still not promoted. But if we can capture more and more, we can allow some sort of burning of fuels. So that is there. It is not exactly finest we want to use first globally. Wherever they are the finest, use them.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam. Madam has got some questions.
So when we have natural plants like for this house, so is it already starting that in most portions, the environment has less CO2 compared to the other plants?
No. It is not like that.
So why is this fine?
Yeah, because if you see, it is in a rock form. Enhanced weathering is making very fine. So there it is doing what on the geological scale it is supposed to do. But the way we had added into the last 300 years, from 300 we had reached it, and just yesterday I was seeing that Mauna Loa data. It is 4 to 6 ppm highest. And in this year it is some 3, 4 ppm suddenly it has increased. So it is becoming very fast than the rate of that natural processes. That is why it is called enhanced weathering.
If you spread the powder, it will do like, you know, faster.
Yeah, it does fast. It captures. You can see when you spread. See, I have one piece of stone. It is only surface area is exposed. When I break this and spread on this room, all the particles are ready to react. So that is the beauty of this, and that only doesn't capture CO2. It adds so many micro and macronutrients naturally to our soils. So that is concept.
And congratulations for an outstanding.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, madam.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have very
yes. Common term. This fly coal ash, no? Coal fly ash. It has a lot of RE's and critical minerals. Can you use for this, what you're saying?
Agriculture. See, if RE is there, or some other things or metals are there which are toxic, yeah, definitely we can analyze. It's CA, MG, N, and will not be there, PK and some trace micronutrients are, we can have it dry. But see, it is with carbonatites also. We cannot use all the carbonatites, because if carbonatites are too high in uranium most of the time, so then they are radiation. Not good for agriculture. Even ultramafic Sarva saying we are having, because olivine is very fast to react, more faster than basalts, but their nickel and chromium is the culprit. So that is why people are not promoting those. Basalt has been seen as a very ideal medicine, because basalt is a trap, capturing and storing in it is good. The way Iceland people are doing, within 1 year they are crystallizing the gas, anchorite they are forming, and then 1 year it is getting crystallized. But still it is cost incentive, capturing that, mixing with water, pumping deep. This is very simple. A layman can put and throw if it is available easily, and then nature will do the service.
Thank you, thank you. There's one this thing, you know, we are all harping on reducing the carbon dioxide through automobiles and
exactly.
And switching over to electric vehicles. But as you said, in order to mine and beneficiate lithium or any other...
very horrible.
Very horrible, and we create a lot of pollution.
Exactly.
In turn.
Even, sir,
do you think, is it advisable when we look at this?
I recently watched one documentary. It was on the dark secret of green energy. And there, one finest worker worked in Chile, Argentina, and he had got a lot of cases of cancer. Lot of horribly spreading very fast.
Yes.
So that way, fossil fuel has not killed world that fast as lithium is killing in a short duration of time. So that way it is getting demotivated, and geo stock is very less. Maybe after 15 years we have to then search something other. Sustainability is required, but cyclicity means circular economy is badly required. So every year, if we see our in Bangalore city, because I did urban geochemistry here, I am seeing Pinya area and other lakes, they are loaded with heavy metals, loaded with toxins. So if they are recycled, given one more life, that is far better than dumping them.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think there are no more hands.
Can we go back to Stone Age?
No, sir, but we can go a simple life. Yeah. Reduce, yeah. Reuse,
reuse, and recycle. Yeah.
It's not going to
happen. That is the...
And circular economy, it is not, it is being promoted globally.
We are going back because earlier the quarry powder and all that produce a big waste.
Exactly.
Now the sand,
M-sand
and all that.
Yes, sir.
And we are not at all leaving even finest dust also.
Yes.
And not only granular, the sandy portion, finest dust also is being used.
Used.
So that's why I don't know when we are going to get this spreading in the lands.
No, we need to require it only. Because so much of rock is required for between the beginning.
Exactly, sir.
This is
the, sir, that is why, sir, whatever demolishing waste coming in the cities, it is going to be used, and we have to give it new life. Sustainability is required, and their simple city is one big thing if we want to attain sustainability.
Thank you, sir. Now we have stretched this session, I think, too far.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for giving me a chance
on behalf
to speak.
Of the Geological Society of India, we thank you immensely. Let us give a good hand for that wonderful, wonderful time. It was so crystal clear. Your message also, clear message. And the takeaway from that, I think, we have to ponder how to implement those policies. Government has to come forward to take this and implement. Because you are solving the problem of food security and also the climate.